Hola, hello, hi, bienvenido, and welcome back or welcome to Mentors Today. I'm super excited. It's kind of like a theme this week where I just am having great conversations with amazing people that I consider friends. We're both here in Los Angeles again, just like it's happened a few times this week. So I'm really just having a conversation with someone across town, but we're doing it here for you, the audience. So I'm super excited to have Elaine Rodriguez, who is many things, but first and foremost, she's the director at the Los Angeles Economic Equity Accelerator and Fellowship Program, otherwise shortly known as LEAF. That's how we came to know each other. I was fortunate enough to get to be a guest speaker in one of her cohort classes this summer, actually on my birthday. So she's a longtime serial entrepreneur with a really impressive track record in small business, education, and technology. And she has a firm belief that entrepreneurship and technology serve as powerful agents of disruption and change and help enable the construction of accessible and equitable ecosystems. That's really kind of her fuel, and she's going to tell us all about that. She's a dedicated advocate for equity through the work at LEAF. But in addition to that role, she's managing partner at a research agency called List Ventures and acts as a strategic advisor for the LA Small Business Development Center. Through her impactful collaborative efforts over the years, she's led the successful launch of over 20 different initiatives to uplift communities of color. These initiatives have directly impacted the lives of thousands of clients, resulting in the launch of over 100 businesses and the creation of 12,000 jobs. I mean, at this point, it's like her and President Biden are creating jobs. Like, that's just awesome. Elaine's dedication to diversity is evidenced by her daily life and kind of how she carries herself, how she passionately advocates for all of our Los Angeles community. But her involvement extends beyond just this work that we've described, and beyond just her professional roles, right? She contributes her expertise to a variety of different advisory boards. I think Pledge LA is one of them. We'll probably touch on that at some point. Grassroots organizations, small business collaborative groups, educational institutions, and tech advocacy groups. Welcome, bienvenido, Elaine. How are you, buddy?
Thank you, Rob. Thank you for that introduction. Man, when you say short bio, I feel like it gets longer and longer every year.
I know.
I can't seem to, you know, just sit still. But I'm excited to be here. I feel like also this year I should add, I know that this year I'm going to add that I'm also an avid soccer fanatic.
Okay.
And I am an Angel City supporter group member, part of Poderosa. So that's also going to be added to my bio this year.
That's awesome.
You can find me at, you know, BMO most nights watching, football.
Almost every night of the week, for sure. And it's funny because you unknowingly basically segued right into the surprise first question I was going to ask you. You love Angel City FC and LAFC so much. I mean, we're both fans of football, soccer. We're both super fans of Angel City FC. I'm kind of weirdly probably just fans of both MLS teams here just because I'm so old and I was around when there was only one of them. But I have two questions for you. One, tell us why. Tell us why you're such a huge football soccer fan. And then two, as you talk about that, tell us why you think both of these clubs are so important to the future growth of Los Angeles.
Yeah, so, you know, I'm Mexican. I grew up watching football on Sundays, right? Mexico as a country has a huge soccer league, right? There's,
yeah,
I think, three different soccer leagues. There are, you know, tons of different teams. And so, yeah, I grew up watching football, but I also just, you know, never really followed it once I got to the U.S. And in this last, I want to say like last 3 years, I was like, all right, I'm going to just like start reconnecting with sports in general and started with American football. And then I was like, that's fun. And I like it. I do, you know, I do have a lot of fun in that. But, you know, some friends were like, let's just go watch a soccer game, right?
Okay.
And yes, we started going to soccer games. And I actually went to Copa Angelina last year when the Mexican team came to LA to play against Angel City. And I was like, man, women's soccer is so much more competitive, in my opinion, right? The women are just like incredible, right? Incredible athletes. You could see the fierceness. You can see their passion. You can see all the things they stand for, right? Everything from what they wear to like their captain, you know, armbands, to the way they color their hair, to the people that follow them. And to me, that was a moment where I was like, man, women in general, you know, we're so good at like showcasing who we are by the way we carry ourselves. And that transcended in that particular sport. You know, when I went to see that game and I was like, this is it. Like, this is home. And I remember, like, I was sitting there thinking, how do I come to more, you know, women's soccer games? And then realize, man, we have a team at home that I didn't even know existed, Angel City. And I was like, cool, let me just check out, like, what does, like, a season pass look like? You know,
right.
Thinking, like, maybe I'll just, like, I might not be able to afford, like, a whole season pass because I thought it was, like, super expensive and unaffordable. Looked into it, and I was like, oh, this is very doable. So next thing you know, I bought a season pass, and I was like, I'm in for the game, right? I went to the opening game for Angel City, and I saw the TIFO go up, right, which is the big banner in front of
the supporter section.
And I was like, oh, my God. I was like, how do I get to that section over there? Like,
okay.
What do I do to sit there, right? So in my inquiries, and I'm, like, starting to, like, Google things, look people up on Instagram, I found this amazing group, Poderosas, that I was like, I really resonate with their mission statement. I resonate with, like, the members, the community work they're doing. And to top it off, they were wearing my favorite color, which is bright pink and black. And I was like, I'm here for it. This is home. So
that's awesome. And prior to that, like when you had, hey, let's go see a soccer game with your friends, but before Angel City, you had gone to LAFC match.
Yeah.
Or LAFC matches. So because you're just as dyed-in-the-wool supporter for LAFC as you are for Angel City.
Yeah, no, absolutely. So my, you know, previous business partners from my very first nonprofit have season tickets. So they would always invite me, like, hey, come to a game, da da da. And it just happens, like, I think that's the beauty of soccer. And I think to your question of, like, what does it mean for LA? You know, soccer has a community built into it, right? And they have a way of building community. But in LA, more than any other place, I think, they've been able to really rally up the Black and Brown community. And so when you go to these games, you're just like, I'm home. This is it. Like, this is where I was meant to be. The food, the ambiance. You know, it's just like, it feels like home. And that's very much why I was like, yes. So now you can find me, you know, I go to Angel City games with Poderosas. I recently joined Pride Republic, which is, you know, their LGBTQ+ supporter group for LAFC, who are really working and expanding their, you know, initiatives around inclusion for the LGBTQ community. So it's a whole nother intersection that I'm like super excited about.
And you're like, hey, here are some lessons that we've learned inside of the ACFC community that I can teach you LAFC people, like, because we're really good at the LGBTQ intersection, right?
Correct. And I think that's what's really beautiful about it, right? Different groups teach you different things because they have affinities or just more folks kind of driving certain inherent, like, you know, ethics around it. So that intersection has been really helpful. And I get to hang out with my friends all the time. So I, you know, I'm not complaining about that.
No, exactly. And you can tell me more if you have more details, but, like, from my perspective, big fan, occasional attendee, not a season ticket holder yet, but love, love, love Angel City above all the experiences. Like, both clubs seem like they're really committed to, like, our local small business and entrepreneurial community. I mean, especially on the Angel City side, where I know more of kind of the human story of the people behind it, those are, like, very entrepreneurial women, right? I mean, those were either some venture capitalists, angel investors, or, you know, previous startup entrepreneurs or early stage company executives that are the founding team and now management team behind it. But they both seem to do just an incredible job of, like, really connecting with, like, local vendors and local programs and all that kind of stuff. Do you have more insights on that?
Yeah, no, absolutely. So I think, you know, from the mission that they set to kind of support the local economy, but also I think they're being very intentional about including, like, the folks that know, right? Like, the folks that are in the know. So, you know, I can tell you that from, you know, an Angel City perspective, they have regular conversations with us, with the supporter groups, about how they should go about bringing in different things, right? Everything from, like, is this an accurate representation of what you would want to see, right? I want to say, like, we just started, you know, Latine Heritage Month, and they came to us and said, here's what we're thinking, but does this represent you, right? And I thought that was really significant. And also just being able to share, like, yeah, this is how I want to be represented. This is how I want to be seen on the screen, as opposed to someone just coming up with it in an office and hoping, right, that that
right. Was right. Well, I was going to say, right, because the normal business model of, like, professional sports franchises would be, you know, like, yeah, we connect with our fans, but we connect with them after we tell them what we're going to do.
Exactly. Or they give us cookie cutter representations, right?
Yeah, right. But in this, so to be, like, proactive about it, that's awesome. And also, I think part of the misperception, you know, women's sports versus male-dominated traditional professional sports is, you know, women teams or organizations can get engaged with their fans more because, you know, there are fewer fans. But that's not the case with Angel City and LAFC. It's literally like they're both putting 22,000 seats, put people into those seats.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think that's really, you know, and again, you know, I have had season tickets to, like, the LA Kings, to the LA Rams. And with those, it feels more like a transactional space.
Yeah, yep.
Versus Angel City specifically, it does feel like a collaboration, a working collaboration. And by no means is it perfect, but it is much better than anything I've ever, you know, kind of encountered. So I'm happy in working with them, you know?
And it was, and I really wanted to, like, talk about that right away because it is such a defining part of your personality. Like, it's just like how you are as a fan is how you are in real life. It's how you are when I saw you in the classroom. It's how you are when I see you at events. Like, you are just infectious energy and excitement and enthusiasm for what's possible. And so, you know, you are literally like the perfect definition of a great fan. And that's how you carry yourself as well. So you alluded to, right, you're Mexicana, proud, strong Mexicana. Tell us the story. Like, what's the background story? Where's the family roots traced to? And, like, how did we get to life here in LA working at Leaf?
Yeah, no, absolutely. So born and raised in Mexico City, come from, you know, middle-class family, and got to LA when I was 11. And our immigration story, you know, just like a lot of other folks, my mom came, you know, following my stepdad and just decided to take roots here, which was really great. A couple years later, I joined her. And so I got here when I was 11. I was in seventh grade. And I was like, cool, I'm an immigrant. I don't speak English. I don't really know a whole lot about this country. We moved a lot the first couple of years, which allowed me to actually catch up. You know, when I came, I was in ESL classes. I had a second or third grade reading level. My parents actually ended up moving us to Missouri to, you know, work.
First migrated to LA, but then left LA, went to Missouri for work.
Yeah. And then I caught up essentially because we're in the part of Missouri where we're at, there was no Spanish speaking anyone and there was no ESL classes. There was nothing. Right. So they were like, cool, you have to go to school, but you have to figure out how to do this. And essentially caught up. Right. I mean, it's immersion at its best. Right. They're like, you just like,
we're going to stick you in the Ozarks.
Yeah.
You're going to have to figure it out.
Sink or swim, yeah. And I also was going to school. Middle school was during the time in which we were passing notes in between classes. Like, we did a lot of writing, you know, in between classes because we didn't want to pay attention to the teacher. So a lot of my friends, and it's interesting because I have a stack of letters of, like, in between classes, we were passing notes, and my friends would give them back to me, and they were proofread. They would be like, oh, you spelled this word wrong, or the sentence not structured.
Informal social group was what was really accelerating education.
Yeah. And so span of, like, you know, what is it, 14, 15 months from moving, we came back to LA, and I had caught up and surpassed.
Okay.
They put me through the testing process again, and they were like, oh, you have a, you know, 12 plus, you know, reading level. So I was like,
they're like, you're back.
Yeah, I came back as a freshman in high school, and they were like, oh, you're caught up, and went straight into, like, AP courses and went back to high school like a, you know, like a regular kid. But yeah, I grew up in El Monte, a lot of, you know, Hispanic and Asian families. And yeah, just, I've been working in small businesses. I am undocumented, but I have DACA. So for the last, I don't know, 10 years, I've had DACA since Obama kind of put it through. And I mean, I worked in small businesses like most of my early 20s. I worked in restaurants. I worked at makeup counters, chiropractor. I mean, you name it. I probably have worked in a industry that you'd be like,
you've covered the service jobs.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, I decided to go back to college and I was like, all right, cool. Like maybe if I get a degree, like I'll figure something out that I haven't yet. I have to say, I did not go back to college because I needed the education or the money. Like I was making good money. I was doing fairly well for myself, but I always thought about getting an education, and it was something that my, obviously my mom, we was like, yeah, you should like get a degree, right? So I went back to Pasadena City College, took a few classes, got involved in, you know, some community work. And I was like, okay, I like this. Ended up transferring to Cal State LA. Actually, I took a gap year. This is very, I think, common between us immigrant kids, right? Like I took a gap year between Pasadena City College and Cal State LA because when I looked at the tuition, I was like, I'm not going to have enough money. So I took a year and I worked full time and saved. And this is something that I always share with folks. Like I saved $13,000 and I was like, this is going to cover me 5 quarters. Cal State LA was still in the quarter system at that time. And I was like, I have 5 quarters to figure out how to finish my degree. So
like you gamed it out. You knew this is the
match. Like I was like, this is it.
For me to be successful, here was part one. I got to take the year off. I'm going to focus. Okay, I'm going to get that accomplished. Now that this is going to buy me that much time. And now that's it. Because I don't know what might happen after that. So I got to get this done.
And that was, yeah, and that was it. So I transferred to Cal State LA. I remember meeting with my counselor and I was like, okay, so here's the thing. I have to be on class overload because I only have enough money for 5 quarters. So how do I do this, right? And my counselor was like, people stay at Cal State LA for a minimum of 3 years. Yeah. You're trying to finish your degree in a year and a half.
Right, because you had transfer credits from Pasadena City College, but probably like a year's worth or something, right?
I had 2 years.
2 years. Okay, so you still should have had like a full 2 years.
At least.
Of school left, right?
At least.
And most people attack the financial challenge by spreading it out longer.
Right.
This isn't about like, well, we can stretch it and I can pay for it little by little by little. No. I'm not going to do this for like 5 years. Like I've got the money for 5 quarters. How do we fit this degree into 5 quarters?
Right. And it also just financially, I was like, okay, so you're either a part-time student or a full-time student, but you don't have a cap on how many units you can take. So I was like, no, put me on class overload so I can graduate in these 5 quarters. And essentially,
did you?
I did.
Okay. And also new bit of information for me. So not only are you working at Cal State LA now, you graduated from Cal State LA.
I graduated from Cal State LA. And, you know, again, I mean, look, I did a lot of things. I was really creative and very entrepreneurial at Cal State LA to get my degree.
Okay.
I like looked to see what were some of the classes that I could maneuver into like fitting into some of the work I was doing, seeing what classes like maybe fit into some of the previous work I had done. I talked to department chairs. I talked to professors and said, like, what would it take for me to get those 3 credits? Like, can I write a paper? Can I do a project without actually having to take the class? Because I knew I didn't have the time or the money. So I was like, how do I make this fit? And department chairs back in the day are now deans, and they will tell you, they have stories about, oh yeah, a little lady would sit outside of her office and beg for different ways for her to get credit for things because she was on a mission to like graduate in 5 quarters.
Two things jump out at me. One, I love that you used the word, you were very entrepreneurial about how you went about getting your degree, right? Because you can be entrepreneurial,
yes,
without being an entrepreneur.
Correct.
Right? So I love that. But here's the other thing that I take away. You learned how, like you didn't have, like there was nobody at home who said, oh, by the way, so what you want to do when you go to campus is you want to try and hustle your classes and you want to, like, so you learned out of necessity, out of just sheer straight up need, how to be your own fierce, the stories from the deans, how to be your own fiercest advocate.
Yes.
And fast forward now, we live in a world where you and I meet and you are a like known in the city and in your work as being a fierce advocate for others.
Yes.
Right. So like is part of your love for advocacy for others born of the fact that you had to figure out how to advocate for yourself?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think I have a love for advocacy, obviously for myself, for my community, for the folks that I love. But I also have a really strong sense of duty to teach others how to advocate for themselves, right? How to see like different perspectives, different views.
Here's the roadmap.
Right. Like,
or the roadmaps.
Yeah, exactly. Everything from, you know, how to leverage a class at school to, you know, what can you say to your boss to like get that next promotion, right? How do you talk to somebody about trading something with you? I think those are all just things that absolutely were born out of, you're right, out of necessity, but also just out of like passion to get things done and understanding my limitations, right? Like I could have extended my college career, but I knew that if I did, I was like, I don't know, like I'm not going to be able to finish. And I had set a goal. I was like, I'm going to graduate and I'm going to do this. And everyone told me like, it's not going to happen. It's not doable. And then that's also part of like, I think is our, now I know, right? That's also my trauma response. When someone says like, it's not doable. It's me saying, watch me.
Yeah.
That's my coping mechanism to be like, cool. Watch me do it.
Thanks for setting that. Thanks for like throwing that motivator down at me. Cause now
exactly.
I'm extra derby. You know, it's funny is you clearly learned in your own advocacy. And like you said, like even just how to speak to people, how to manage up, right? How to get those. I mean, you clearly were pretty good at that because you literally did that to me this summer, right? I would say, my dad would have called it, or my mom would have called it, you sweet talked me when I was like, oh yeah, I totally would help you with that class. And then I was kind of wavering because I looked at the date on the calendar. I was like, oh, it's my birthday. And like, I don't, like I blocked my birthday off for like 8 years.
Right.
And then literally like unknowingly to me at this event we were at together when there were like 10 of the students that happened to be there with you, these incredible diverse women, you're like, basically, come on, like they'll sing happy birthday for you. Like, you know, we'll make it a special. I was like, all right. Right. Like I'm in. Right. So you have done that, but I love that idea of, you know, the things we learn and then we have, and not all of us have this, but some of us do, right. This learned behavior that says like, okay, if I've gotten a break or if I've created my own break or I've written the map where there was no map, I have like, I want to, but also maybe I kind of have a responsibility,
yeah,
to the greater good, to turn around and try and help people like develop their maps.
Yeah, absolutely.
You didn't have that in your case.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think that has been kind of a recurring theme, even, you know, throughout my career. After Cal State LA, you know, I went on to work in corporate America. And I started again from the bottom as a coordinator and worked my way up to a director level job in 3 years. And a lot of folks were like, we've never seen that happen, right? As a matter of fact, you know, the kind of deciding moment for me to leave that job was that I wanted to go higher and I hit a little bit of a cap because they were like, you're growing too fast and this organization is not ready to support you in that sense. But thinking about how others, when other coordinators would come in, I was like, listen, from day one, these are all the things people are going to ask you to like give you the promotion.
Yeah.
Right. And when I got to a director level, when I got to the director level position, I also started setting up budgets that people were like, you know, we like coordinators don't get paid this much. And I was like, but they should. And so let's talk about how much more we should pay them. I remember once as a director, we were hiring a manager and I had set that salary like 15,000 higher than what the base was across the organization. And they were like, at this level, this manager would be getting paid like $3,000 or $5,000 less than like, you know, an associate director or something, right? And I think the thought behind that question when they brought it up to me was like you don't even get paid that much, right? Like, and then I was like, right, because you're like, you didn't pay me equitably.
Right. I'm underpaid too. But I can't change my own salary, but I can change the salary structure for the people that are working on my team.
For other people behind me. Yeah, exactly. Where I was like, if I was a manager coming in, like I wish the director that was in my position would have fought for my salary to be higher. And we have those conversations all the time, right? Like we were at a networking event and one of my teammates, you know, was chatting or whatever. And I think another director was like, oh yeah, like, are you thinking about changing jobs? And I was like, listen, pay her what she's worth and you can take her. Like, I'm not here to like hold anyone back. People need to get paid what they're worth. And again, I will be the first person to advocate for my team to be like, yeah, like take a job where you're going to be happy, where you're going to do what you love and you're going to get paid what you're worth.
That's you're a leader. That's the difference right there. This, what you just described is the difference between leadership and management. Right. And so you're a leader. The whole idea of leader, and I used to say this to teams that I've had the fortune to run over the years, it's like my job is literally to elevate you to such a point that you leave.
Yeah.
But then another aspect of my job is then to also cultivate a whole new pool of talent behind you,
yeah,
so that I can replace you when you do leave, right? So like that's just leadership. Good for you. So all right, so I want to dig into your work and more of the how we do it and why we do it. But let's go back. Let's reframe for everybody. Tell us about LEAF. Like tell us what it is. Tell us why it exists in the bubbles of Cal State LA, and then what it does in the community.
Yeah, absolutely. So LEAF, short for Los Angeles Economic Equity Accelerator and Fellowship. We essentially run, we have three pillars of our work. We have an accelerator that is focused on BIPOC women entrepreneurs. We focus on early stage entrepreneurs under 2 years, under $100,000 revenue. We are essentially the first accelerator or point of contact with a lot of women that have never heard of resources, don't know what an accelerator is, don't know that there's free mentorship, free technical assistance, one-on-one support out there, right? So we actually have a mission to ensure that 80 to 90% of our cohort members are women that have never heard of resources, are completely just out there navigating the world on their own, the entrepreneurial world on their own. And we match that with our second pillar, which is our fellowship. We match that with students at Cal State LA, which is why we're hosted at Cal State LA, to have a 10-month long fellowship. So these two pillars were born out of, like, I would say the top 5-10 things or gaps that I saw both when working with entrepreneurs and of my own personal experience going to Cal State LA. Cal State have a great reputation for having really amazing professors. We have tons of like economic, social movements that are born out of our schools. Unfortunately, we do not have the, I would say, life experiences that private universities or even, you know, higher ranked public universities have, right? We don't have a ton of like internships or fellowships, placements, systems that other universities have. And because of the population we serve, so 80% of the population that we serve are people of color. Many of them are Pell Grant eligible, which means they're like under a certain poverty level. They're the first ones to go to college. Many of them are first generation where their parents are immigrants. So a lot of these students that we serve do not, myself included, right, cannot have an internship where you don't get paid. The choice is, do I take an unpaid internship, quote unquote, air quote, right, you know, work experience, or do I pay my rent? Those are your options, right? Or I don't have gas money, or I don't have food money, right? And so really working on a paid fellowship was the second component of LEAF that I was like, we need to create an environment in which we're teaching students core life skills, core post-graduation skills, and giving them work experience so that they have a chance, you know, landing a job, growing within a job. And it's been really based off of like all the things that I learned in a really steep way in my first corporate job. I was like, man, no one taught me anything about scheduling calendars. No one taught me anything about, you know, writing emails and like responding to
all the things we later eventually take for granted.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right? No one teaches you. You're supposed to just learn it. Like you're just, but you're, even if you went to a differently credentialed university of some sort, right? Like you still wind up like landing in that first job and you're like, I didn't have a class in like how like professional email communications.
Yeah, no, exactly. Right? So those are kind of our core two things that we do at LEAF. And we have another bucket, which is our community and beyond. And our community and beyond has really revolved now or has grown into doing a lot of data and research gap filling. So we have an amazing research team that really is settling in on capturing the qualitative and the quantitative data of the how the program makes a change, but also what is available in our community. So we do everything from canvassing, you know, we go door to door looking at businesses, talking to business owners and seeing what their gaps are per like city, per even like business corridor. And from that, we've grown a couple of different programs to directly support those businesses that we're encountering. About 80, 90% of the businesses we encounter on a door to door basis are mostly like Spanish speaking or other language, you know, they're immigrant, first time like entrepreneurs. And, you know, they're your mom and pop shops at the corners that are like, oh, yeah, like, I wish I could
run a
social media account, but, like, how?
Right. The bodega, the nail salon, exactly. The whatever, the, you know, yoga center, whatever
exactly.
It might be.
So, yeah, so we do a lot of data capturing, and we convert that into, like, policy and advocacy work. So we give that data to our public officials and say, like, look, this is what's actually happening in, like, the 10 corridors around you, right? And we support other organizations to create programs, right? What does it look like to create an actual program that will work, you know, in East LA and South LA and Alhambra, you know, wherever we're at.
And next year will be the third year.
Correct.
Of the program. So we're in it now, right?
We've
come out of the startup garage and we're in it and we're learning things and it'll be better. We were talking about before the show, it'll be tweaked, fixed, refined, made better, made stronger. But really aimed it. And I can attest to it, like having had the one exposure to it as the guest lecturer that won my birthday that one day. There's incredible women. Like it's just a really diverse group of women from a variety of backgrounds. But like, as you say, women of color and, you know, all kinds of different businesses that they were working on, but really kind of focused on the same place in the process, right? They were all like, they're in their own journey, but they're at like, you guys curate a community and a group that is like kind of aligned with one another. So they're growing together.
Yeah. And I would say like, you know, across the through line to through all the work that we do is our economic justice principles, right? With our community and beyond, this understanding that there's so many businesses that are left behind that don't have access, right, to resources. Many of them, you know, when we've done our canvassing and some of the data shows that many of them rely on themselves to figure things out. They're like, I don't know who to go to, right? And with the early stage entrepreneurs who have decided to start these businesses as part of our accelerator, as well as of our fellows, is creating a different type of business that is focused on community and impact first, as opposed to profit first, right? Because again, right, we see that like, I think like the general consensus is like, oh, you start a business to like make money. Absolutely. No one wants to deny that. We're going to continue to work on that. But, you know, we're really trying to install these principles around you have to make enough money so that you can pay your employees equitably. You have to make enough money so that you're not working 90 hours a week.
Right.
You have to make enough money so that you have a retirement fund. You have to make enough money to what are all these other things that are needed, right, for your community, right, to have a space. And I think that's really important.
Immensely important. And it's also interesting. Occasionally I get to reference just the fact that I'm old guy, therefore more life experience, been around, like I always joke, just been alive longer, right? And so I can remember things that I saw in the past and or heard stories of from generations ago. And one of the truths is like business as a catalyst for good and as kind of a pillar in communities, that was pretty much the universal truth up until like the last 30 or 40 years.
Yeah.
Basically like kind of up until about the 1980s.
Yeah.
And for those that listen to me all the time know that I blame a lot of our current struggles on the 1980s. But up until about then, that was kind of the norm. And so in some ways, I get excited about it. One, because it's the work that you're doing or how Cal State LA, in this case with the LEAF program, has positioned itself inside of its community to make an impact. It's not only doing like, oh, we're trying to address the problem that exists today, right? But in my mind, it's kind of like, don't tell anybody. But basically, we're kind of like, we're working our ways back full circle to the way it used to be.
Yeah.
When business was also about people and not just profit. And when, frankly, the profits that you made were poured back into the business in such a way that it was poured back into the people that worked at the business, community involvement where your business was located, and not just into the pockets of the shareholders and stock buybacks and things like that, right? So that's really incredible. I want to do a quick reset just because we have people that listen to this podcast all over Latin America and in the US. So just quick for everybody else to understand quickly, I'll tell the story. So we've talked about Cal State LA. So it's California State University, Los Angeles. And what that is we have, as everybody who listens knows, California is essentially the fourth largest economy in the world. If we were a country, LA by itself would be the 17th largest economy in the world. So like we're basically a country over here, right? That is attached to the rest of the country. And therefore, we have two very large university systems. So we have a UC, University of California system, which is the one that people outside of the state tend to hear the most about, the bigger brand schools, the UCLAs, the UC Berkeleys, where my daughter went, Go Bears, right? But then we have this massive other organization called California State University program, right, or system. And that is their couple dozen Cal State campuses up and down.
There's 23 campuses across the state.
12 or 13 UCs and like 23. So imagine that we're not even touching private stuff today. Like, this is just the public university systems that anchor our state. And as Elaine has alluded to a few times already, the Cal State system tends to be more urban concentrated campuses and tends to be in places where the population is inherently more diverse or browner and blacker than the populations might be in where some of the other campuses are. And so therefore, just kind of probably missional at the like mission statement level, but definitely like practically speaking, places like Cal State LA, like your university that you're a proud graduate of, play like an integral role in the community. Maybe, no, still global, and they have, but maybe a little less global, maybe a lot more local. And that's just, again, another kind of return to the ways that it used to be, so to speak, right? Where universities were supposed to be kind of catalytic anchors inside their community. And that's clearly what you're doing. Like, that's clearly what you're doing.
And I'm gonna throw this in there just so that for you and for your listeners, we started at Cal State LA. That's my alma mater, you know, and I love it so much, but I am also a big advocate of Cal States in general and community colleges. So we are at Cal State LA now.
Let's go.
Yeah, like, I mean, there is, in my mind, there's 23 campuses.
Exactly.
That can have a version of LEAF, right? Depending on what their community needs.
100% true. And to your point, community colleges, which is like the two-year schools, again, for people outside of the state, two-year schools.
Yes.
Junior colleges, they used to be called. That I think we have the biggest community college system in the country.
Correct.
Right. So again, like huge opportunities to expand this type of programming. And again, not for self-aggrandizement, right? But to expand because you can expand your impact.
Impact. Yeah, absolutely.
That's awesome. We talked about it in the bio. You've just listed like a litany of stories. You've successfully connected so many different diverse entrepreneurs. Like, what is it? Are there a couple of unique traits or attributes that when you design these programs, you're like, we have to make sure we do this and we have to make sure we do this?
Yeah. So I talk a lot about culturally competent curriculum.
Okay.
And I talk a lot about who delivers that curriculum. And those two are deeply, deeply tied to each other, right? So a person that is not mission aligned and or in the same frequency, you know, that it takes to speak to a person of color tends to not be able to deliver that type of curriculum. And that's always super noticeable, right? You talk to folks and you're like, they kind of get it from a high level, but they're not really about it, right?
Hey, how did I do?
And so, I mean, I was about to go there, right?
For a middle-aged white dude, that like...
I was about to go there because I said, I was thinking about how I met you the first time and we're having a conversation. I don't remember what we were talking about, but I remember walking away and thinking, he knows what's up.
There we go. That's what I like to hear.
And then I was like, I wonder what his expertise is. And I think I saw you like maybe like, I don't know, like a week later. I don't remember how much long. It wasn't very long in between. And then I was like, oh, he's a network person, right? He's a person that connects people. And then I was like, yeah, okay. So I had all these ideas in my head as to like what your expertise was, but I also knew that like you were about it. So
that I could fit that 3C mentality. Like I could come in and I could be culturally appropriate.
Right.
I get it.
Yeah. I'm like, it's one of those things that you can see it. You can see it in folks. So, and when I talk about culturally competent curriculum, like we can teach, for example, you know, you came in and you talked to us about
relationships, right?
Relationships and talking to humans. Right. But I think the component was that like you understand the internal barriers that our particular participants face, right? Like when you're a woman of color, it's like we have all these preset expectations or preset barriers that we don't even always realize that we're having. And you know that those are some of the barriers we're facing. So when you came and talked to our folks, sure, like networking, talking to people, but you came in with that lens of like, you might be thinking this, or you might be feeling this, or you might be experiencing this, but you still have to be able to do these things to connect with others. And you made it accessible.
Thank you.
I think that's the process, right?
And that was the goal, right? I mean, that was your mission to me. That was the objective that you and Alex had charged me with. And it was interesting because this is kind of a fun full circle story too, which you know, right? But like that content, although we shaped it freshly, the truth is it's rooted in me talking about those issues for the prior 7 years to audiences in Latin America of all brown skin people, and predominantly in our work, probably like 60 to 65% women and younger women, right? So even though I had not ever had the opportunity to speak at Cal State LA or even in our community of LA since I've been back the last 3 years, like about this type of thing to the general public, I was pretty prepared because essentially I've been the only white minority guy in the room of other people that we were. So the basics, as you would say, over the years have gotten shaped for that. Frankly, if someone asked me to give that talk in Santa Monica to a bunch of people that look like me, I'd have to like strip away kind of the cultural context that I have developed over the years from predominantly working with audiences like yours.
You know, culturally competent because you understand the culture behind it. You know, you have the expertise. And then I have to give you your flowers. Like, you are one of our top rated speakers.
No, no offense to all the other great speakers.
No, yes. You were like, you know, you were up there. So I was really happy to see that. And again, that comes with, you know, a lot of like just expertise that you have and time that you spent put in to learn the ins and outs.
And while you're very kind, like this isn't about me. The reason I'm celebrating and I'm like high-fiving here is because what that really means, because you didn't score it, the women in the room scored it. And so what that really means is the people who were there to try and learn, and frankly, then take those lessons and apply it to their businesses and their lives, they felt like they learned something, right? I asked the question at the end, which everybody laughed when I asked it, because I was like, was this valuable? Was this helpful? They're like, of course it was, right? But like, I ask that question after every Zoom I do. Like we could presume that in life, but you don't. Like the point of the question, like you have learned over the years to curate from your own experiences, from the collection of information that comes from the women and the people in your communities that you have deeply understood because you talk to them, right? You have learned how to curate these learning environments in a way that does translate to, as we said in your bio, 12,000 jobs and dozens of initiatives launched and hundreds of companies helped to become more sustainable or successful. And that's just, I mean, that's, I don't care what you get paid. You should be paid more, but like that aside, like it's also just got to be hugely rewarding.
It is. Yeah. And I would say like, I've been at Leaf for, like I said, 2 years, we're going on to our third year, but I've been doing this work for, you know, now like 5 years. And I have to say like, this always sounded really cliche to me, but it's true. I don't feel like I work most days.
Yeah.
I feel like I just sit in my passion. I sit in the things that I love to do. And, you know, I get to hang out with my friends. I get to hang out with my friends. I get to build cool things. I get to see other people grow. And I have to tell you, like, I have never had more work-life balance than, like, running my own gig. Like, I was really deeply afraid of, like, oh, I'm going to run this program and I'm not going to have time to do anything.
Sure.
But I have, you know, I've been really like focusing on like practicing what I preach, which is work-life balance, ensuring that this is giving you not just, you know, the mental, emotional sustenance that it needs. Financial obviously is also part of it, but that it also helps you balance, you know, with other things that you're looking to do.
You have total work-life balance. You have work and then you have soccer. And all of it involves your friends, and all of it is you sitting in your passion, and all of it is sitting in your joy, and all of it is doing fun stuff. Like, that's it. That's why this is working so well for you.
I was going to say, maybe that's why when people see me, like you said earlier, like they're like, you're just like happy all the time. And I'm like, what is there to be unhappy about?
You're a fan of the work that you're doing, and you're a fan of the soccer clubs that you support. All right. I'm going to squeeze together two questions into one, kind of like wrap this section before we go to our fun mentor section at the end. But I was going to ask you, because you see so many businesses, and also you're just a deep advocate of like the healthy application of technology into society, right? Not the abusive, dark applications. But so I was going to kind of ask you, bear with me as we combine this. I was going to ask you to kind of like, what types of trends do you see coming and kind of changes do you see coming? But let's merge that with my punchline question, which I think is, I'm more interested to hear your answer. Involve technology, involve new trends, involve changes in business you see coming. What would you want Los Angeles to look like 50 years from now?
Ooh.
So at the end period of your life, I'll be long gone. What should it look like?
Man, I say we all watch soccer all day long, but no, that's not what Los Angeles is going to look like. No, man. So you're right about me being a big advocate of both technology being transformative, if both, you know, used in the right way, but also I would want it to be built by us.
There you go.
Right. I think a lot of technology is still being built by people that don't look like us, or the majority of people. And that tends to just really, I think that's where a little bit of the gaps are, right? And where like we see some of these things like not working. But 50 years from now, I'd like to see a lot more folks employed in something that they find either working on or working for, you know, organizations where they can see themselves represented, where they're finding, you know, joy, even if it's temporary,
yeah.
Right? Even if, you know, like, this isn't the job, this is not what I'm going to be doing for the next 40 years, but I'm here now and I'm happy. I'd like to see more folks, you know, really find a niche in their passion or things that they enjoy to do and build around that. I think it does make a huge difference when you're building from a place of joy as a place, not from a place of fear.
Yeah, sure.
I think we see a lot of
the whole idea. I talk about this all the time. The idea of get to versus have to.
Yes. Right. Exactly.
I get to do this work. I get to do work on this. I get to work at that company versus I have to.
Right. Exactly. So I think seeing a lot of that, and I think it's going to, you know, honestly, like I want to see more inspirational, transformational leaders.
Okay.
As opposed to just operational and transactional.
There we go.
Those are two very different things, right?
That's awesome. I mean, do we also suspect that 50 years from now, there will be a LEAF-like program on every university campus across the state?
I think you can count on at least 23. I'm going to put that out there now. I think you can count on at least us operating across California, you know, I think.
Because there should be, right? Not just because we want it to be, but because there should be, because it is clear in the data that it is an agent for impact, for universities impacting their communities, and it is an agent for universities literally being able to foster economic development and job growth.
Yeah, absolutely. I think similar to, you know, well, Cal State LA is number one in upward mobility. I think every Cal State has the capacity to become, you know, that catalyst of upward mobility for the students that are attending those schools, the parents of the students, the communities around it. So, you know, I want to see that. I want to see those systems really change. And I think we're on the cusp of something. Like I can see, I've been doing academia for a minute now, and I can see them changing a little bit of their rhythm, and I don't know. We're gonna give the other systems a run for their money.
I 100% believe that. I've said, and I will say repeatedly and more loudly in the next 5 to 7 years, like I actually think we're gonna look back at this moment in time and we're gonna redefine this era, kind of like as there was a before times, before the pandemic, and then there was the after times. And I also, just in the grand sweep of history, I love history. I love kind of social history. My friends tell me I'm like a closeted social anthropologist, but I think we'll look at the world. I think we will look back at some point in the next 25 to 50 years, and we will see that there was an American evolutionary phase that was 1970 to 2020, and then that there was a world from 2020 to like 2070. And so I think, and in Los Angeles' case, like we already know, that it's going to be browner and blacker. It's going to be darker skin than it is today. And like, so we know that. Like, that's not even up for debate. Like, we know that is going to be true.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And I think we're gonna set, I mean, California already does this, but we're going to set the pace for the rest of the country, too. Yeah,
because the entire country will continue to be that as well. Okay, so, and last part of that, real quick. How many NWSL championships will ACFC have? Woo! How many will Angel City have won by 50 years from now?
In 50 years, man, you know what? I'm going to give them a solid 30.
Wow, you're ambitious. I was going to go like 10. I was going to go like one every couple of years.
But I think more importantly, we're going to lead the way in the way in which the next 30 teams are going to get formed.
Yes.
So there's 10 teams. There's two more coming. The way the next 30 teams are structured, I think we're going to lead the way there.
By the way, I'm going to send this episode to Julie Ehrman as my mechanism to try and get Julie Ehrman to come on this show. All right, so you are now the mentor for the day. How do we say mentor in Espanol?
Asesor?
I think it is asesor, or like, I know like sometimes they like mentoría, like.
Oh yeah.
So you're that now for the next few minutes. Share three pieces of wisdom, advice, guidance for anybody you'd like, for younger you, for your current cohort of women that you're involved with, or for the world at large. Three pieces of advice.
Ask for help twice as many times as you are willing to lend a hand. That's hard. Asking for help is hard, but we do it. We are innately helpers. So if you're helping somebody once a day, ask for help twice a day. That has been really hard for me, but I think it's a really good piece of wisdom. Number two, learn to listen in the chaos. I think there's a lot of moving parts, people, places. Just listen, pay attention to what might make sense for you. You're going to find, you might be able to find the answer to your biggest problem in the last person you're expecting. So again, learn to listen in the chaos. And I think we're in that space now, right? So much things happening. So number three, build up time to apply what you've learned. So build it into your schedule, right? Like whether it's 2-3 hours a week, 4 hours a week, whatever your schedule allows, but be consistent about that. I think setting up time, I set up like 3 hours on Mondays to like, okay, what did I learn last week that I didn't apply? And I was like, oh, that's a really good piece of knowledge, but you never do anything with it, right?
Right. So be intentional about how you use your time, because, you know, dream vision boards and manifestation are nice, but the truth is like, the world manifests stuff to the people that step out into the street and get in the way of it.
Yep. So you have to build in that time. It's invaluable, right? To just keep moving forward.
I love it. I can't thank you enough. You're awesome. You know, I think that you were very kind to me over the summer. You made me feel like a rock star on my birthday, which is really special, because this is going to wind up being an important birthday to me as I go forward into some things I'm doing in my life. So I'm always going to remember that experience on June 23rd, 2023 with all the ladies at Leaf. But I also just wanted to say, like, people aren't paying attention to the fact that this podcast is basically like a cheat code for me, selfishly, to be able to just have more conversational time with people that I consider to be friends. Like, so we could run into each other, not run into each other. We could see each other, not see each other. But the truth is, like, if you come on the pod, like, I get you uninterrupted. We get to just have a great conversation about your life, which is basically what I would do to you if we were sitting in a coffee shop. I'd be asking all the same questions. So thank you for that. It's been awesome. Thank you for coming on. How do people find you on social or not, if you don't want them to? And then how do people find the program online and or like should watch for new application, all that kind of stuff?
So you can look us up on social media. Instagram is probably our main social media space. Leaf at Cal State LA. You'll find us there pretty easily. Leaf, that's LEEAF at Cal State LA. If you Google Leaf at Cal State LA, it'll also pop up. You guys can absolutely follow me. I am an old school social media person, so all of my social medias have the same handle. So it's at Elaine Venice, like the beach city, ELIANNE Venice, VENICE. Yeah. And so you can find me on all the platforms, actually. I'm a little bit more active on Instagram and Twitter, but for the most part, you can find me at in any platform.
So. And people, if you're here in Los Angeles or you ever visit Los Angeles and you're not sure how to find her on social media, just go stand out in front of BMO Stadium. And about 9 months out of the year, there's a chance that she'll be there one or two nights a week.
Look for the rainbow flags and look for the bright pink canopies. You'll probably find me there.
Volemos, right? Awesome. All right. You're the best. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Rob.
As always, we thank you so much for listening. Today's show was recorded in Los Angeles and produced by Deanna Bernal in Mexico City. You can always find, like, follow, subscribe, and share our show via any popular podcasting platform, as well as find us on social media at Mentors Today. And if you'd like to connect with our host, you can find Rob at I Am Rob Ryan on just about any social media platform. Gracias, and thank you.